All right, good.
Today's daf in Menachot is daf Hey Vav, and we've just completed discussing, first having determined the actual process by which we get the best solet, starting with the place that we would get the best solet from. We've moved on to the shemen. Yesterday we discussed the places where one could purchase the best shemen. And in today's Mishnah, which we're exactly holding at, which is about one third of the way down on the daf, we're now going to discuss the process by which we get the quality of shemen that we desire. Now, the way that Rashi understands the sugya is that there were three separate periods which the olives would ripen, which means that there were three mesikot, and that's how he understands it. Tosfos brings a raya from Pe'a, that doesn't seem to be the case, that there's really only one particular period, and he understands it's referring to different parts within the same tree, that the area that's exposed to the sun is going to ripen more quickly. But in any event, we'll just read it like Rashi, keep it simple. And the question over here is that we have really two completely different uses for oil, of course. One use is for light, and that's the menorah. The other use is for the achilat ha-mizbeach and the achilat ha-kohanim. It's interesting that in the Torah, the requirements for the light are different than the requirements for the achilah. So that particularly the clarity of the oil is considered to be central to its value for smooth lighting, and therefore the zach katit is what's mentioned in terms of the menorah. When it comes to the menachot, there's no indication towards makbid dafka on zach. And because of that, the processing was done differently. Kossis appears by the menachot as well, as the Gemara will point out. But it isn't needed by the menachot, as we say. We're going to get both zach and katit, we'll see, in the Gemara. So what we would do in terms of the processing is different, because remember that an olive, if you've ever picked one, is pretty unusable for getting anything out of it. It's just like a rock. It's completely dry. So there's a number of different ways that we could do something about that. The common way is that we take the olives and we simply let them break down. So we put them in a container that's called a mita'in, and they sit there and they gradually oxidize and they melt away. They get very hot. We'll see about cracking, whether we even need to crack. They get very hot because of the gradual oxidation, so it heats them up, and that breaks them down further. And then they're ready for pressing. Pressing, what we would normally do, is we put a very heavy korah, and we put stones on top of the korah, and there'd be a lot of weight that's pressing down, and that would take out a lot of the oil. To make it even better, we would grind them before pressing. If we ground them, obviously in the grinding process, you're going to be getting a lot of little pieces of actual fruit that are going to mix through the oil, and then it's not going to be as pure even after you filter it.
It's like the Tropicana orange juice with pulp.
I actually prefer the pulp very much. But the Tropicana Zetim also come in various different types. And so here's how we do it. There's different ways of doing it, and they will produce different levels of clarity in the oil. So Shlosha Zetim, there are three separate types of misika, or three times at which, or three places at which, depending on Rashi and Tosfos. Ubehen, in each one of these three, there are shlosha shebanim in terms of the way that we process it. So let's take the first misika. Hazayit harishon, what we do is migar giro berosh hazayit. Now there's two ways of understanding migar giro, as we're going to see in the Gemara. One is that it really means megalgalo, means leave it there until it ripens in the sun so that you don't need to grind it up. And all you need to do is to crush it, which is a lot easier than grinding it through stones. And the other lotion is megargro, is to actually to give it a press on top of the zayit. The other is that it's a lotion of lakita. Megargro is take it piece by piece, each one, and then be kotashit, which means just to put it through this hand grinder. And then noten l'tochasal, you put it into a basket, and then you put a kli under the basket, obviously, and as the oil drips out on its own, without any pressing, it's going to be filtered by the reeds that surround the basket. And Rebuta says, even that's not going to be clean enough. What you need to do is you put the squashed zayit around the edges of the basket, which means that whatever oil finally gets down has gone through the entire side and bottom of the basket, whereas if you put them all on the bottom of the basket, it'll just drip straight through eventually. It's not going to be as clean. So you have to do it sivivot asal. Zerishon, that is the olive. We'll call it A1. That's A1 oil. Now, what you do after that is you take whatever is left and you put it bekorah. Chozer v'to'in bekorah. And that would be your second level. Reb Yehuda says, no. That's a korah is too much pressure. You use loose stones. That way you don't have the heavy pressure of a korah on it. Because if you'll use the korah, you're already going to get a lot of shimarim, the equivalent of the lees of a grape. You'll get small pieces of crushed olive. We don't want that. So you use either korah according to Tanakama, avanim according to Reb Yehuda, and that is A2, zesheni. Chazar, then you take what's left over and you put it through an actual matchina. So it's not just crushed, but it's ground to bits. Then you put it back in and you press it normally. That is A3, zeshlishi. Now harishon, A1 is kosher for the menorah because it's zak, as we'll see in the Gemara. But anything below that in your first level of A is limenachot because it's not as zak as is required for the menorah. Now you've got your second crop, asheni, megargiro b'rosh hagag. There you don't go to the rosh ha'ilan. Rather, you stand on your little roof, where people used to sit in the sun underneath their trees, and the tree would bend over the roof, which means that what you're going to get there is from the middle of the tree, not the top that's going to be ripened literally in the sun and be very ripe quickly. So that, you do the same thing, megargiro, on the top of your roof. Vikotesh v'noten l'toch hasal. And there, you just give it a press, a hand press, and you put it into the basket. And here, to Reb Yehuda, says, no, don't put it in the basket, put it sivivot hasal. That's the first. And then, to'ein b'korah, or again, Reb Yehuda says, no, don't use the korah, it's too heavy. Use avanim, that is B2, zesheni. Then you regrind it, or totally grind it, I should say. And then you put it back in to the press, that's B3, shlishi. So it's the same very much as the other, just a question of where on the tree you took it from. Harishon la menorah, vashar la minachot. Now, if you learn that these are literally different crops, not different places in the tree, so then what we're talking about is barosh gago, to let it ripen on the roof, not on top of the tree itself. So that you picked it before it was completely ripe, and then you sun ripen it, but not while it's growing. Shlishi, and then the third. Now the third is a problem because that third crop is not able to be pressed like these, where you could just squish it by hand. There you have to wait until it softens. So you is it. Yeah, they're not going to, either the total amount of things on the bottom, or they're late in the season, and therefore they're never going to sun ripen. So what you do is you let them sit. Otno bebeit habad. You first let them sit for a while until they break down in the matin, and you wait achilake until they're broken down, and then they begin to leak. Now, the liquid that leaks out of them has a very, that's the, we saw before, even better than that, Rukli used to throw out. It doesn't literally throw it out, obviously, because it was good as a depilatory, but throw it out from use in his salad dress, or throw it out of his kitchen. But here, this muhal is bad smelling, and it's from rotted fruit, basically. And that needed to be dried out. So you take it after you've let it rot for a while. Umaleu, you bring it up. Umenagvo berosh hagag, you let it dry out in the sun, not ripen in the sun. Then your kotesh, without the actual grind, the millstone, you don't use stones. Your kotesh v'noten l'toch hasal, and again, even here, Reb Yehuda says that C1 is also not in the middle of the sal because there's not enough filtering action. Sivivot asal, that is C3, zerishah. Then you put it in the Quran. Here to Reb Yehuda says, don't use the Quran on the second level pressing. Use avanim. All right? So we use avanim. That is C2. So zesheni. Then chazar v'tachan, you take that out, grind it up, and put it into the regular press. That is shlishi. And here too, harishon l'menorah v'ashar l'menachot. So I think I skipped that on the second one. I should have said it. On each one, A, B, and C, the first level oil, even though it's each one is less than the one before. B is worse quality than A. C is less quality than B. But remember that we have to isolate the issues. When it comes to the menorah, the isolation is in terms of zat, its purity. And we'll see the machloket about katit. Because of that, the first is always kosher l'menorah, because it's always was unground, and it was filtered out by not being pressed by any kind of heavy weights and being going through the basket. So that's always kosher. That's not to say it's of the same quality oil, but it's all kosher l'menorah. Gemara is going to get to us. We'll wait till we get there. L'menachot, the rest of it is usable for l'menachot. So all of the 2 and 3 of both A, B, and C is kosher for menachos, not for menorah. Iboilahu. Says the Gemara, the word that you used at the beginning is not very clear. Does the Mishnah say megargiro means you take them one by one? Or does it mean megalgelo? That to be megalgel, like we would say in English, is to roll right along or to roll with the punches, which means to have patience, not to attempt to mechanically work things out. In which case it would mean, on the contrary, it would mean, make it a little higher, it's cold already like this. Yeah. Megalgelo would mean to leave it totally silent. There's no way to know it's on.
Except for the chill.
Totally quiet. So we're megalgel would mean not to take any action, but rather to leave it there, have patience until the sun does its work. And that's a very different meaning. Tashma. Tanya Shemin Zayit, when we talk about over here, now this brighter we're going to see is not exactly the same as it says in the Mishnah. But we're going to pretend for a moment that it is. So we're darshaning the Pusik. So we say Shemin Zayit. That means that it's Mizeito. There's already oil on the Zayit, not from having pressed what's inside the Zayit. And how's that possible? Mikan Amru Zayit Rishon Megal Delo. Have patience. Leave it up there all on the top of the Zayit. And then you can already take it in. Koncelo Beit Abad V'tochano Berechayim. Oh, wait a minute. This is a little bit strange. As yours is Tochano Berechayim right away for A2. And in the Mishnah says you're supposed to be Kotesh, the Rechayim. That wasn't done right away. And so, okay, we're going to see about that. And notno b'salin, you put it in the sal, shem la yotze mimeno zar rishon. Ta'an b'kora, now here it doesn't say, this is important, we're going to dig it later. It doesn't say anything about, no, you got to use avanim. Ta'an b'kora. Shem la yotze mimeno, that was A2. That was sheni.
Mm-hmm. Cool. What?
Amazing. It's only one problem. You never remember to turn it off.
Exactly. That is the problem.
Yeah. So then you go take it out again. V'chazar. So chazar v'parak etachan. Take it out. Press it. Now grind it again before pressing. Then bitoin. That is A3. Zayashlishi. Here arishon l'mnora. Hashar l'menachot, of course, what supported us was the word megalgalo, but this is already leads us into a lot of subtle differences between the Mishnah, which we'll discuss. V'chein zayit sheni, the B was done in exactly the same way. The zayit shlishi, you needed to first be otno bebet abad ad shi'ilakeh. You needed to wait until it broke down from the heat and bacteria in the ma'atin. Then you bring it up L'Rosh Hagag, and you treat it the way you would treat figs. In other words, you have to wait until the first mual dries out. Vaseoto can mean timara, or the way you would make the treat a date. Achi azuvu meimav, and you then wait until it actually is ready for the real shemen to start coming out. Kon solabet abad, tochano berechaim. You bring it into the shop, grind it up in the regular rechaim, put it into salin, and then shemen ayotzei mimenu zeya rishon. Then your ta'an b'kora, shemen ayotzei mimenu zeya sheni. Again, no mention of putting it around the outside of the sal or using the avanim. And then parak, you take it out of the press, you go and put it through a second grinding, chazar v'ta'an, tachan, and then ta'an again, zeya shlishi, that's B3. Here to arishon l'menorah, and Hashar, so this is C3. Harishon Onav Hashar L'Menachot. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you never use the Rechaim for the second stage of either of any of these. Lo Ayatov Anob Rechaim, Ela Kotesho B'machteshe. V'lo Ayatov En Bakora, Ela Ba'avanim. V'lo Ayanotem B'salim, Ela Latok Svivot Asal.
So here we have Rabbi Yehuda clarifying his three opinions for the differences between him and the Tanakhama. Now, don't we have a contradiction here? You said kotesh. You used the word initially, kotesh. Now, who is the one who says kotesh in the Mishnah? I mean, it just says the stam, kotesh, v'tein atoch asal. But I thought that here in the Braisa, it turns out that kotesh is Rabbi Yehuda. Because the Tanakhama in the Braita said you were tochein even on the second stage, even on the first stage. So here we seem to have a contradiction in the Mishnah now that we've seen the Braita. Because the Mishnah says, stam your kotesh, but that's Rabbi Yehuda.
And then it says, utoch hasal, which of course is not like Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Yehuda argues, he says, no one has to be svivot hasal.
So that's going like the Rabbonin. I don't understand.
Well, it's true. Our Tana in the Mishnah is actually a hybrid of the two Shitot. He holds like Rabbi Yehuda in one thing, and he holds like Tanakam in the other. So therefore, he states it, the Ketisha, as being his opinion, stam. Doesn't need a machlokas Rabbi Yehuda. He agrees with Rabbi Yehuda about that. However, when it comes to the Tochasal, over there he disagrees with Rabbi Yehuda, and he brings Rabbi Yehuda as a second daya that argues on him. Now we continue directly, this really is all one mission. So we continue now to explain what the different levels are in terms of their value relative to each other, because we don't know how the second of A relates to the first of B, and so on and so forth. So if you have a choice, I mean, we're not going to assume that these are one right after the other in order of nine. I mean, we understand the difference from the known and the novice and so on. So how do they interrelate relative to each other? Well, clearly Harishon Shem Rishon, that doesn't relate to anything. I mean, that is AA. So that's absolutely the plus. Ein lamala himeno. Well, no. Patience. The Gemara will ask that. We're going to learn it out from a pasuk that you get. That's megalgalo. Megalgalo is also in the Daf Yomi. Harishon shebereishon ein lamala himeno. You can't get better than AA. Now, hasheni shebereishon, harishon shebereishon. Now you have to line them up. So line up the second one, so that the first one, the second one, is keneged the sheni shebereishon, shavim, which of course isn't true. We know it can't be true, because one, that is to say, B1, is kosher l'menorah, whereas A2 is not kosher l'menorah. What do you mean, shavim? How can it be shavim? Okay, but that we're going to get to in the Gemara. So now the rishon shebasheni is the same as the sheni shebereishon. They're shavim. Hashlishi shebereishon vasheni shebasheni veharishon shebishlishi shavim. So now we take the third group, set it up so that number one comes out against the third one of the first group, the second one, and so on. And then you can figure it all out, and then you get the shlishi shebasheni vasheni shebishlishi shavim. Hashlishi shebashlishi, that's the lowest quality you can possibly get. There's nothing else that is shavim. So obviously, if you have them arranged with a drop of one, then the top is not going to have anything to compare it to, and the bottom is not going to have anything to compare it to. So that's basically what we've done. We've created this chart. Af haminachot hayubadin shiyita anushem and zayetzah. I mean, if we would have been left to our own devices, we would have assumed that when it comes to the minachot, it makes sense to even be more makbid and to make certain that it should be the highest quality oil. But I'll tell you why. Look, if ma menorah she'ina la'achilah, nobody's going to be eating the menorah. You're burning it. So, and nonetheless, the Torah insists on to the shemen zayitzah. So minachot, which are la'achilah, eno din she'yita'anu shemen zayitzah, Talmud omar, zach katit. Therefore, the Torah uses the word V'yikro elecha shemen zayit zach katit lama'or la'alot ner tamid. That means it's dafka lama'or. The din of zach katit relates to ma'or and not to achila. In which case, ein zach katit liminachot. Now, our first question says, how can you use the word shavim if you're saying it isn't shavim? You just said it isn't shavim. V'amr, did I hear you right? You said rishon is kosher l'menorah.
And the shahr is for only kosher b'menachot. So in what way is A2 similar to B1? They're not similar, and so on. I mean, we have this problem twice. We say shavin, we mean shavin l'menachot. In other words, gufa, what we're bringing out is that there is not an advantage when it comes to zach to a mincha. So we now understand, we're going to learn this out of the pasuk, basically, that we just had, that zayit, zach, katit, is dafka lama'or. So that when it comes to eating, there's no advantage in having it zach. The reason we want it zach is for its capillary flow. When we're talking about burning it, so we get no sputtering, we get a beautiful clear light. There it makes a difference. So the clarity of the oil relates to the clarity of the light that's produced. Once that's not an element to compare, they become shavim. That's the chiddush.
People buy oil in the marketplace for monopolies, like the flour they bought, I think, from the Gisbert.
In practice also was available.
Yeah.
Tunarabon. Zach. Okay. So call a minachot, it says that the Mishnah, actually Kol doesn't make the money, but minachot also ayubadin, that we should bring it. It's very interesting, by the way, that there's a double meaning to the statement, because badin and shiyit'anu are both words that are used in the processing of the shemen. It's a very cute double meaning. Hayah badin, which is the beit abad, shiyit'anu, which is the mitain. It's like a play on ma'atin. It's very cute. I don't know whether there's any meaning to it. But in any event, you would have said, Tara Rabbana, that zach, the word zach means not clear in terms of its clarity that you're seeing through. It means naki. Zach always means clean of anything else but oil, which means there are no small pieces in it. Rabbi Yehuda says, and when it says katit, gentlemen, which you have been very studiously ignoring by claiming that you can grind it up, katit dafka means not ground up. Katit means katush. It's crushed, but it's not ground. There's a big difference. You're not going to have little tiny ground up pieces of olive in it. Now, yocho ye zach katit pasulam nachot. You might think that since the Torah is saying lama or, it means dafka lama or and not l'minachot. Talmud Lomar, therefore, in one place, the Torah actually makes an interesting indication where it says, Isaron solid balul b'sheben katit revi'itayin. All of a sudden we need katit. Now, I mean, why mention that? Because the point is that you can use katit too. So then why did you mention katit lama'or, which meant only lama'or? Oh, the point over here is, you don't need to use katit, but you can use katit. And why would I make such a fuss of it? To teach you to save money. In other words, there is no point in looking for a needless quality. It's like people who go and they take the highest quality gasoline when their motor is meant to run on a lower quality, right? So they'll say, but I want to treat my car right. It's no longer right. You know, I mean, it's just a waste. The same thing is true over here. It's a waste. And as we know, Omar Rebbe Elazar, Torah chasal mamanon show Yisrael. The Torah is not interested in your spending money just to make a show. Tzav et b'nei Yisrael, v'kur elecha shemen zayit zach. Omar Rebbe Shmuel bar Nachmeni, what do you mean v'kur elecha? Yes, v'kur shemen zayit zach. The point of elecha is, you're the guys who need the light. I don't need the light. Don't do me no favors. So lecha elecha v'lo li. Because I certainly am not telling you to light the menorah for light. Lola ora ani tzarich. I don't need any light. I'm doing this, as we'll see later on, as an indication that there was a hashras hashchina in the Beit HaMikdash, which is for your covenant. And furthermore, if you take a look at the way we put things, we put shulchan betzofein, menorah bedarim, with the mizbeach in the middle, right? Does that make sense? I mean, if you are organizing your house, you put the lights on the other side of the room from the table, and you have something in the middle. I mean, this is crazy. So it's going out of its way to show that the organization has nothing to do with utility. Isn't that where the shulchan is meant to be an indication of a desk with a lamp or a table with your table lamp over it, so you should be able to eat? That also indicates the same thing. Lo amar abzrik amar abelazer lo la achilani tzarich, v'lo la orani tzarich. I don't need any of this, you understand?
Vayaz labayet chalonei shekufim atumim. Exactly the same in the creation of the windows in the Beit HaMikdash. They were built opposite the way normal windows are built. Normal windows are built so that you're protecting. Again, there's two lashonas over here, but this is the way that it makes most sense. You have a small opening for so that's protected from the outside, and you allow the walls. Of course, nowadays this doesn't make any sense; the walls are so thin. But if you take a look at our walls over here, it makes a tremendous difference. You let the light spread out across the wall, and then it goes into the room. You have a very, very thick. You can have 2 meters before you get to the window. The Beit HaMikdash was done just the opposite. As if to say the light was coming out of the Beit HaMikdash there, not coming into the Beit HaMikdash from the outside. And that's for the same purpose. Exactly the opposite, which is the way we explain it. As if to say, we're not making these windows for light coming in. Furthermore, so what is the meaning of parochet ha'edut? I mean, what's the edut? We say ba'ohel mo'ed. All of a sudden, we have to relate the menorah specifically to the fact that it's mechutz to parochet ha'edut, which means that it's not just that we're telling you where, we're telling you that it relates somehow to what it is that the parochet is supposed to serve here. Somehow the edut is an edut that relates to the menorah itself. What in the world might that mean? Must be. Point, as I said, is not to indicate that the HaKadosh Baruch Hu is using the light. And halo lecho ba'ei olam, this is edutu lecho ba'ei olam shashchina shora b'Yisrael. As we'll see. The whole point over here is so that it should be clear to everybody that the Beit HaMikdash is inhabited by the Shechina. Ve'im tomar, if you'll think for a moment, l'ora nitzarich, that I need the light. V'alo kol arba'im shana shachu Yisrael ba'mitbar, lo chu ele lo'oro. The Anan, and the Amuda Eish, that was walking with Bnei Yisrael was the source of their light. So you're going to tell me that now we have a Beis HaMikdash, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs our light. That's not the point. El edutu l'cho b'olam, shashichina shorah b'Yisrael. Now, there's a very interesting pirush that the Rishonim bring, which is v'chila ora hu tzarich, meaning Aaron HaKohen. You think that we're lighting the Beit HaMikdash for Aaron to be able to see what he's doing in there. V'alo kol arbaim shana, the Anan was b'schus Aaron. So that means everybody was walking in his quest. What would he need to light a light for? And Tosis says, look, I mean, it doesn't fit in that way with the context of the sugya here, because here we're constantly proving that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying, I don't need the shulchan, I don't need it. But on the other hand, I mean, the Gemara should have said, if it was a reference to the Shechina, it's a little bit funny to say, Kol Arba Yom Shami, you can say, doesn't all of humanity live by HaKadosh Baruch Hu's light all the time? I mean, wouldn't that be an easier thing to say? Obviously, I mean, the point over here is the particular light of the Shechina that we had really during from the Anan itself, which becomes the Anan in the Mishkan and in the Beit HaMikdash. Fine, okay. In any event, it seems quite clear from here that we're referring to HaKadosh Baruch. But what is the Eidut? I mean, certainly people could say, there's light in there because God needs light. I mean, where does it say, or your Kohen needs light? Where does it show them that the Shechina Shor B'Yisrael? My Eduta, Omar Rava, this is a reference to Ner Ma'aravi. The Ner Ma'aravi, look, had exactly the same amount of shemen as the other Nerot had. So, notim ba'shemen, keneged chavroteha. Nonetheless, mimena haya madli, uba haya misayim. The Maisa, of course, it's a bachloket, as you know, what we mean by the Ner Ma'aravi, which is dependent on whether the menorah was situated in east-west direction, or whether it was north-south. So the east-west, you could talk about a Ner Ma'aravi, but if you're talking about a north-south placement, so that you would see it as you walked in the eastern side facing the west, you would see it north-south, that is from your right to your left, as you looked at it, what would be the Ner Ma'aravi? So that would have to mean that one of the Neirot was bent, either the flame itself was bent klapi Ma'arav. The Pashtis of the Sugya in Tamid takes for granted that the Ner Ma'aravi are the Neirot on an east-west placement, the western side, furthest away from when you walk in. And in fact, we would separate between the Hatavat Chamesh Neirot and Hatavat Shtei Neirot. And so one of the Pshatim would mean that
even though we did it separately and would often find the other candles had gone out, always the Ner Maravi was left burning, and according to some, you would be madlik the other Nerot, even from the light that continued to burn from the Ner Maravi, even though you needed to clean out the Ner Maravi as well. According to Rashi, you would take the contents, hold it in your hand. You know, there was the separate lamp. So you would put it in, take it out, leave it in your... fix it up, and then relight. Which would mean that essentially it just kept burning. Exactly the same as the menorah of Hanukkah. In the Medrash we find, there's a Medrash Tatruma that says, that the menorah, when it was lit on Rosh Hashanah, would never go out until the next Rosh Hashanah. So that it was a constant Hanukkah. Which raises all kinds of issues. What about the mitzvah of Hatavas Haneros? So maybe it's a difference of Hatava. So many learn anyway, that the mitzvah of Hadlaka is the mitzvah of Hatava. Not particularly the actual the lighting itself, but the mitzvah. It's all this relates to, it's not really our sugya, it's a tamid sugya, but certainly there was always the ability for the Ner Maravi, although of course the Gemara says that this was really only until the time of Shimon HaTzadik. From the time of the death of Shimon HaTzadik onwards, it was very much a function of the darga of the Kohen Gadol, because of course the menorah is the continued presence of Aaron HaKohen. That's the reason that Shelchah Gadol Mishalahem Behalot Chatan HaNerot, next week's parsha, where we're going to discuss the difference between the Chelek of Aaron and the Mishkan and the Chelek of the other Nesiyim. This inyan of the menorah is, as the Ramban says, Shelchah Gadol Mishalahem, relates directly to Hanukkah, to the Kohanim throughout the Dorot, and because of that it is directly related to the Madrega of the Kohen Gadol, who is the Aaron HaKohen of that time. So the Mimena Yam Adliku Ba'ayam Esayim, unfortunately we were not Zecha in all of the Dorot, but depending on who the Kohen Gadol was. The Ta'im? The Ta'im is what you're talking about. Yes, what about the Ta'im?
They had different, they had more
light. What light
did they have
over there? They had torches, you see in Tamid. They would walk in with a torch.
Mi'ayin
hayu mevi'im et hayayin. Now, where did you buy wine? So that, note that structure of the parak is, where do you buy, how do you process, what is the quality level? So we did that for the solet, we did that for the shemen, and now we're moving on to the wine. So where did you buy wine? Okay, Barnea is not here, so we can't have any fun in his neighborhood, you know. But you got to have Kiduchim and Atulim. These are places in Yehuda which were Alpha Layayin. This is A-plus ratings. This is, what's the name of the book they have today? That rates the wines. It's all Rogov. Rogov's Guide to Wine. Right. So this is Rogov's A-plus, and it's Alpha Layayin. Shnilahem is Beit Rima, Beit Lavan in the Har, and Kfar Signa in the Bika. Some say it's Kfar Signa Bika, meaning in the Galil. That's how the Alpak learns it. Kol ha'aratzot ha'yu ksherot, ela bikan ha'yu mevi'in, because this was the best. Here too, ein mevi'in lo mibeit ha'zabalim, same machloket, beit ha'zabalim mean that it needs artificial fertilization, or does it mean it's built on landfill, or near a landfill? Velomi beta shalachim, it requires irrigation. Velomi mashin is rabbeinahem, nor in vineyards where you have things growing in the vineyard, because that makes the vine have less nutrition. So even if you just have weeds or whatever is there, you can't use that. V'yim hevi kasher. Ein mevin heliston. Of course, helis is the sun, so heliston would be sun-ripened grapes. And that's sort of like the Concord grape, the New York grape that makes an extremely sweet wine, is a sun-ripened grape, which is considered to be a chisorin when it comes to the wine here. So it's mo'us, is the Gemara. But the Gemara makes it, which would make sense that the Catskills would, you know, the, you know, it's that kind of attitude, Borscht Belt wine, you know. It's a real one.
No, it actually is
left on the vine. And so that's called helistion. Now, the Gemara is going to be mechalik between fruit ripened, where there are very ripe fruits. They actually, sometimes they spray sugar on the fruit, or they use a smoking process to make the fruit react and make it more sugary, which we'll see, we're also going to talk about. That is considered to be pasul afilu b'diavad. Maybe the helistion would be kosher b'diavad here. Well, the Gemara uses that as a distinction. Because here it says helistion is imevi kasher. Ein mevi'in yashan, divrei Rebbe. And we're going to see in the Gemara, the question here is that we're up against a little bit of a problem. On the one hand, we like the aged wine. The problem is that if you don't let the aged wine sit together with shemarim, it loses its color as time goes by. And since the color is very important to us as well for the nesachim, because of that, we have to strike a balance. So Rebbe says, if it's over a year old, if it's yashan, it isn't properly ready. We don't bring matok at all. I think we're just going to ask, but what about the Heli stone? Here it's talking about matok, a species of grape that creates very ripe, very sweet taste. Velo mu'ushan, nor where we've used some type of spray or a smoking on them. Velo mevushal, v'imevi pasol. Surprisingly, we do not use wine that was grown the way we grow today. We take all of the vines off of the ground to prevent infestation and so on, and we put them on daliot, which are those, what do you call that in English? Trellises. We put them on trellises. But the vine on the trellis is not as rich as the vine, what grows from the vine that is ragliot, which is left on the ground. So don't bring from a trellis, bring from ragliot, and bring only from kiramim ha'avudim. And those are kiramim that are constantly, if you've ever volunteered to work in a kiram, it's constant work, and you have to dig a number of times around the bottom of the vine, keeping things away, making sure that there's place for the water to gather, and snipping off at the right time, and so on. So it's a constant work. So what you'll just pick from grapes that grow on their own is not good enough for the mizbeah. V'lo koncinotam. Then after you've got the wine, don't put it into chatzavim gedolim. The chatzavim gedolim, which of course in those days was made out of cheres, caused the wine to have a poor taste. Ela b'chaviyot ktanot, are kept in smaller barrels. Ve'inu mamaleyat ha'chavitat pia, don't fill the barrel to the very top. If you fill it to the very top, then the wine doesn't aerate, and it's not as good in its taste. You need to have the smell in the air that is near the wine. And when you take out the wine, the place to put the berez, how do you call that in English again? When you tap it, yeah, is not from the top. Do not take it from the top of the barrel. Because you've got little areas that are, we call them kemach. They're actually, of course, they're yeast infestations, but we call them kemach because they're white. There's a lot of whitish areas on top. So those areas are not quality. And lo mishulea, you don't want to tap it on the bottom because you've got more shemarim. There's a lot of lees there that have settled. What you'd bring is mevi mishalisha mi'emtza'a. From the middle third, some learn, or as others learn, from the middle third in the middle, which would be in the middle of the barrel. It would be a funny way of saying it. So most learn it means the middle third. Ketzad hu bodek. How does the gizbar know when to stop letting them utilize a barrel? The gizbar would sit there, and we've seen also in the other Mishnah as well what the gizbar would do about the solet and how he would make sure that it's by putting his hand into it. Over here, he would sit there holding his ruler, which was often used for measuring, like Beit Shammai, it was used for measuring what they would bring in and so on. So he would hold the ruler. We'll see why he would hold the ruler. And the moment that out of the tap would start being zarak hagir, white color would start coming through, so it shot either the identifiable little pieces of grape or kemachim. He would take his ruler, hit the barrel as an indication, stop. They would have to stop the barrel. The reason that he didn't speak, as we're going to see, is remarkably, speaking is very good for making the ketoret. Therefore, the bedavka talk while they made the ketoret. Wine is poorly affected by talking. And therefore, instead of talking and getting his breath in the story, he would just make a sound to get them to stop drawing the wine. Now, you've got to be really sensitive sensitive. So it's the next level of rating in Rogoff. You know, you can rate the redness, the taste, all the other thing. And then there's the silence rating, which, you know, if you have a wife who likes wine, would be a great thing to introduce into, you know, Sheyesh bo kemachin is actually pasul. If there's kemachin growing on this wine, that's like mold. And that passes the entire thing. Because doesn't it say, Timimim Yulachem? That it says at the end of the pasuk, right? So it's Mimum Yulachem, that's referring to the Hikrafta Mishael Ola Hashem, which is the Purim, the Elim. But the very next pasuk, after Timimim Yulachem, Umin Chatam Solet, and then it keeps on talking about the Mincha, and then it talks about the Nesachim. So apparently, they all have to be Timimim. So that means Timimim Yulachem, Umin Chatam. So Timimim Yulachem together with Minchatam, together with Niskeyem, which means that if there's any damage to the Mincha or to the Nisachim, you can't use that wine. And it's Begeter, a Balmum. Of course, the level of Balmum, we already saw that it's a question whether it's actual Chi of a Balmum, but it's possible the way a Balmum would be possible. Shlosha Zeitime, Ubehem Shlosha Shimani. Hazayet Arishon, Megarger over Rosh Hazayet, Kotesh, Benatena Tochasal. Rabbi Yudom, no, never letoch asal, sivivot asal. Zerisham. Chazar v'toin b'korah, Rabbi, no, we don't use a korah, b'avanim, zesheni. Chazar v'tachan v'tan zeshlishi. Harishon l'menorah, ashar l'menochot. The second batch, B, megargar obrosh agag, v'kotesh v'noten etoch asal, Rabbi Yudom, sivivot asal, zerisham. Toin b'korah, Rabbi Yudom, b'avanim, zesheni. Chazar v'tachan v'ta'an, zeshlishi, here too in B, harishon l'menorah v'ashar l'menachot. Shilishi, ot no b'beit abad first, al shilakeh, then you got to get rid of all the bad smelling stuff that has leaked out. So na'aleum in agvob rosh agav, kotesh v'notin etoch asal. Rabbi Yudomer, now, sibibot asal, zerishon, toim b'korah, Rabbi Yudomer, no, b'avanim, zesheni, Chazar v'tachan v'tan zeshlishi, here to our rishon menorah, v'yashar l'menachot. Iboilu. Is the opening word here megargiro or megalgilo tnan? It's a question whether it's Chinese pronunciation or the Israeli. So tashma, v'tanya shemin zayit, it means mizeto. V'kanamru, zayit rishon megalgilo, v'rosh hazayit. V'konsol lebeit abad v'tochano berechayim no besalim shemen yatzmi menazeh ayah rishon ta'an b'korah shemen yatzmi menazeh ayah sheni chazar porak tachan v'ta'an zeh ayah shlishi harishon menorah ashar l'menachot v'chein zayit sheni zayit shlishi. You'd have to go through the other step of otno first ad shilakeh, then you'd have to be ma'aleil rosh hagag, you'd have to be osikim in tomorrah ad shiazuv v'meimav. Then console beit abad tochano berechayim noto besalin shemini yatzim ben azayah rishon ta'an bekorah shemini yatzim ben azayah sheni parak hazar v'tachan v'tan zayah shlishi rishon l'menorah shal menachot. Rabbi Yehuda argues in three issues. First of all, you never argue. First, tochano berechayim yukotcho m'machtesh. Furthermore, second issue is you're never toin bekorah. For the second stage, you're only to aim with avanim. Furthermore, you never put it directly into the middle of a sal for the first stage. You always put it sivivot asal. Says the Gemara, but now, if that's the case, then the Mishnah is not going according to Reb Yudah or according to Rabbanan. Because the Mishnah says kotech mani Reb Yudah, then it says toch asal as Rabbanan. You're right. This represents a hybrid shita of a tana that is sover like a vate bechoda. And nonetheless, he argues b'chad, and he says you can put a b'toch asal, even though he agrees that you're kotsho and not tochana. Harishon shabarishon, ein l'mala, hemeno l'akrem de l'akrem. Hasheni shabarishon, harishon shabasheni, are shavim, because we just line them up, and we make the second A2 being the equivalent of B1. Of course, that's not really true. Hashlishi shebereishon vashini shebesheni varishon shebeshlishi are shavim, because now we line up the third one step down. Hashlishi shebesheni vashini shebeshlishi shavim. Hashlishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishishish Sfar, I have a dingy tanu shem and zayetzar. I mean, it's kavakom refunor shen alachilatu na shem and zayetzar. Surely one would have thought that the menachot shen achila eno dingy tanu shem and zayetzar. Talmud lomar zach katit la moor, but ein zach katit le menachot. But how could you say there's shavin if you just said the rishon is lemenorah, the ashar leminachot? Omer nachra yitzchak shavin means shavin in terms of the menachot. Now afa menachot hayabadin, but what can you do? It says lamaor. Tan rabban. The word zach in zach ela naki. Rabbi Omer, yeah, you forgot to mention that the word katit means katush and not tachun. Now, you might think Zach Katit is actually possible in Menachot. It says, only Lama'or. Now, that's impossible, because we do find Yisaron Solot Belu B'Shem Katit. So, in Kei Ma'atam Lomar Lama'or, to teach you B'Chisachon. I'm not interested in this. What is Chisachon? Omer Rebbe Elazar, Torah Chas, Alma Manon, Shal Yisrael. Tzavid b'nei Yisrael v'ikho elecha shemen zayit zach, Omer Rebbe Shmuel bar Nachmeni. Why does it say elecha? Because you're the one who needs the light, not me. Lo lo ra'ani tzarech. Furthermore, shulchan b'tzafon menorah b'darom, and you put the mizbeach in between. Omer ezrik, omer ebelozot, another indication. Lo la'achila ani tzarech, v'lo lo ra'ani tzarech. These are kelim not meant for utility. V'yaz l'bayit chalanei shkufim atumim tana, shekufim mibifim v'atumim v'bachutz, as if to say, lo lo ra'ani tzarech. And the menorah is yarochoto mechutz the parochata edut be'ol moed. What's the edut here? Why are we stressing the parochata edut? Because it's edut. B'kol bayolam shashchina shora b'Yisrael. V'im tomar lo'ora nitzarech. How could you think such a thing? Halo kol arba'im shana shochi Yisrael b'midbar lo'ochu ela lo'oro. Ela edutu l'chol bayolam. Shashchina Sharab Yisrael. My eduta, Omar Rava, this is a reference to Nerma Aravi. Shinodrim Bashemen Keneged Chavroteha. Omimena Hayam Adlik, Uba Hayam Esayim. Mi Ayin Hayam Bevimet Hayayin, Keduchim Vatulim, or Alpha Layayin. Shnielam is Beit Rima, Beit Lavan Bahar, Kvar Signa Babika. Truth is, Kala Ratzotu Yukshirot, Elamikano Yomeviim. Ein bevi lo bi bet zvalim velo bi bet shelachim velo bi mash nizra benehem vi mevi kasher ein mevin helestion vi mevi kasher ein mevi yashan di rabbi ve chachamim machshirim ein mevim lo matok meaning in the pre itself lo mushan lo mvushal vi mevi pasul ein mevi min adaliot elo min aragdot u min akramim avudim velo kotzim oto בחצבים גדולים, אלא בחביות קטנות, and you're careful not to be ממלא את החבית על פיה, כדי שיהיה ריחו נודף, ואינו מביא, when you tap it, מפיה, מפני הקמחים, ולא בשולה, because of the שמרים, אלא מביא משלישה באמצעה. כיצד הוא בודק, הגזבר יושב, הקדם בידו, זורק הגיר, הקיש בקנה, stop. Rabbi Yos, Rabbi Yomer, she yesh bo kumachim is parsha. She lemer timimim yelachem, u minchatam. Then also timimim yelachem minchatam and iskeyem, which was the whole thing would be possible.